There's late word from Mexico tonight that searchers have found what appears to be plane wreckage near where an American-registered corporate jet went missing this morning with Latin music superstar Jenny Rivera on board. Tonight, from here in her native Southern California to across Latin America, fans and colleagues of the three-time Grammy nominee are expressing shock and grief over the fate of Rivera and the six other people who were on board the jet. There were no reported signs of survivors at the apparent crash site. NBC's Miguel Almaguer is outside Rivera's home in Encino, California, with the latest.
She was known as La Diva de la Banda, La Gran Señora, who had a voice to gather the masses and a stardom to take over the entertainment industry. Jenny Rivera was the leading lady in regional Mexican music. On December 9th of 2012, Dolores Janay, Jenny Rivera, shocked millions when she tragically died in a plane crash over Nuevo León, Mexico. The business jet carrying seven people on board took a nosedive minutes after taking off from Monterrey, Mexico, just hours after performing her sold-out and final concert in Monterrey. There were no survivors, and Jenny was only 42. On today's episode, we will be discussing about Jenny's earlier life, her career, and her stardom. The Paranormal Association. There's been many conspiracy theories and allegations that have surrounded Jenny Rivera's death, and others who believe that foul play has been involved. There's been claims and stories from the townspeople of Nuevo León who believe that the voice that they hear singing in the mountains is that of Jenny Rivera's near her crash site. To this very day, Jenny Rivera is still a tough act to follow. So let's sit down, pour yourself a shot of tequila, as we talk about the life and afterlife of La Gran Señora, Jenny Rivera.
Hey guys, welcome to Holly Weird Paranormal 2021 Skype edition.
We did it.
We survived another year in this pandemic.
Allegedly.
Oh yeah. It's kind of weird because I was listening to one of our older episodes and I realized, oh, this was the first one that we did in 2020 when we got back from our last break last year and we were sitting in my kitchen and now it's 2021 and we're sitting on Skype going through this pandemic.
It's just so crazy because I started getting, like, obviously, like, you know how your memories will pop up from, like, a year ago.
Yes.
And, like, it's like I don't even recognize that person. Like, the things that I was doing.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so bizarre. Like, I know we've talked about it before, but, like, I literally went to Disney the week before.
I remember.
Everything shut down. And, like, we were aware of COVID at that point. And, we were just like, okay, we won't, like, touch anything, and we'll just, like, wash our hands a bunch. And I had a friend that wore gloves and had, like, hand sanitizer, and, like, our little Disney guide had hand sanitizer. Mm-hmm. But, like, we're so lucky that none of us got sick, like, because at that time we didn't know that it was, like, more airborne.
Right.
So we just didn't know. And then the next weekend, I worked out at the gym the day that LA shut down. I was like, well, it'll be fine. Like, I'll just go to the gym. What?
Yeah.
What? It's just so crazy to think about, like, how much changes in just a year.
It does, and how fast the year went. I was discussing that with my husband, and I was like, I can't believe it's already February. This is when I think we were close to our first shutdown, and here we are still dealing with this pandemic. And now we're going through the third shutdown, you know?
Well, and that's the thing is, like, I remember we were hearing about it at this time. But it was like, well, it's not going to come here. Like, we'll make sure. Like, we were so naive. Like, well, it won't come to America. Like, it's mostly just affecting, like, mainland China, and, like, all these places are being shut down, like, we'll be okay. And then it's, like, it just started domino affecting so quickly.
Yeah.
Like, once we hit March, it was like, oh, no, it's, like, it's global.
We're going to be Hollywood Paranormal 2022 coming live from a cave, you know.
Morse code our little things.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
Well, guys, we are back from our much-needed break, and I know it took longer than expected because a lot of things happen, especially within our country and within our climate and everything. And Bryce and I were like, we just need to take a little longer breather. Well, guys, we decided to open 2021 by offering you this amazing story. We're going to discuss one of the most important singers that hails from Long Beach. She is a big, big figure, especially in the Latinx community and the regional Mexican music scene. And she is known as La Gran Señora, La Diva, or La Diva de la Banda. And that is Jenny Rivera, or as I like to call her, Boss Bitch.
Yeah.
So
that's her unofficial name.
So for some of you guys who are just tuning in, you don't know much about her, you will. We have an hour and 15 minutes just to cover. If you want more of an in-depth story, we did cover her on our TikTok. It's like literally 100 parts because you only have 1 minute in those videos, but I really go in depth. Yes. And you can also catch up with other series that we did of other individuals such as Selena and Richie Valens. And what a lot of them have in common is not only were they such huge pivotal figures in the Latinx community, but they also had a lot of unusual circumstances that surrounded their death. For some of you who don't know who Jenny Rivera is, she was a Mexican-American singer who left such a mark in her community. And she was not only an amazing singer, but she was an amazing mother, sister, wife, thrice times. She was a humanitarian, a producer, a businesswoman with a mind for business and a voice to gather the masses. And she unfortunately left this earth in a plane crash in December of 2012 in Nuevo León, Mexico. So we've been wanting to cover her story for a while on our podcast. Just know that, you know, her story is a very inspirational story. It's very tough to listen to at times. Yeah. It's very complex, but it has a lot of resilience and grit to it. And we just, you know, wanted to share her story with all of our listeners because it's just such an amazing tale. Just to preface, we have a couple of sources for our episode. Our research comes from her book, Unbreakable by Jenny Rivera, the BBC.com, LATimes.com, Rolling Stone, and Billboard.com. So we'll be touching on her early life, her adult life, her celebrity life, and then, of course, her untimely death in 2012, and the conspiracy theory. So there's many conspiracy theories about Jenny Rivera being alive.
Girl.
Why are we
so obsessed with that?
Like, I don't know.
That idea.
It's when you're on the app TikTok, and you read the comments on some of those videos that I've done, it's unbelievable. But I understand where people come from. Like, they cannot process grief. And this is how they band-aid it, you know?
Yeah.
They really believe that Jenny Rivera somehow survived this crash or faked her death. And we'll go as to why that is eventually. So in order to begin, guys, we need to go all the way back. And we're going to go all the way back to the 60s. We start with her parents, Don Pedro Rivera and Rosa Rivera. They both immigrated to the States in the 60s. And at the time, they both had children, two to be exact, Gus and Pedro. First, it was Don Pedro who migrated first. He goes to Fresno, where he becomes a fruit picker, earns enough money to bring Rosa and the kids to the States. And right when Rosa gets to the States to join Don Pedro, they get busy. They get really busy. They don't waste time. So Rosa becomes pregnant with Jenny. And we learn that ever since Jenny was in her mother's womb, she was a fighter. And this is why, because Rosa wasn't planning on having another child because they were barely making ends meet. And they couldn't afford another mouth to feed. So she tried different remedies from requested by different friends to terminate the pregnancy, and none worked. So Jenny was like, I am going to come out of your hole, Mom. Like, whether you like it or not, it's going to happen. So in July 2nd of 1969, Dolores Jenny Rivera is born in UCLA Hospital, and she is the first Rivera to be born on American soil. Now, for some of you who are confused, well, she goes by the name Jenny. Well, she never liked going by the name Dolores because she hated it. According to some sources, the reason why she hated her first name is because it sounded like it comes from pain. Like, dolor, it means pain.
Right.
And Jenny led a very painful life in her earlier years, up until her death. She always referred to herself by her middle name, Jenny. Jenny and her family, they end up moving to the west side of Long Beach, which is a very rough part of town.
Yes.
Their family ends up growing. So now Rosa and Don Pedro has four boys, Pedro, Gus, Lupio, and Juan, and two girls, Rosie and Jenny. So just a brief tidbit about Jenny's earlier life. She is a very precocious but respectful child. You know, she helps her mom around the house. She's a straight A student. She's a bookworm. She does very well in school. She loves baseball. And she is one tough cookie. And a testament to that is when one day she wore a dress to elementary school, and this kid was going up the stairs, and he decided to cop a feel, and Jenny turns around and socks him in the face. So here we are, already learning how much Jenny is a fighter at a very young age. And so Don Pedro, her father, one evening decides to sign Jenny up for a little singing competition where she decides to sing the song Besos y Copas, which is like kisses and cups. Jenny is all for the competition. However, right when she gets on stage, she has stage fright. She forgets the words, the lyrics to the song, and she runs off.
That is the worst
feeling. I know. Poor Jenny.
When you go up on the line, you are never more in the moment than you are in that moment. Literally nothing else matters. Mm-hmm. She's like, dear God, please let something come out of my mouth.
Please let some, like, force of nature wreak havoc on this place, because I'm not ready to
see. I hope the floor opens up and just it eats me. I know.
It's like, there's, whoa, like a tsunami or wave coming through. Like, oh, great. That's my exit. Bye.
And when you're in the audience, literally, I'm just, like, sending all my psychic energy to them. Like, if you know someone's going up on stage, you're just like, take all my talent. Take all my energy. Like, oh, my God, this is terrible.
Well, unfortunately for her, she didn't have that, which... You know, at first,
I wasn't in the audience. That's why.
We just needed Bryce Mitchell Williams to be in the audience just to look Jenny Rivera in the eye and say, you've got
his little psychic energies.
Exactly. Well, unfortunately, you know, she doesn't do well. She runs off the stage and promises her father that she'll never touch her mic again. But that will all soon very much change. As we get more up to date with her life, she's in junior high. She goes to Stevens Junior High School. She then, at that time, meets the man that will forever change her life and send her in a whirlwind of mess. And that is Jose Trinidad Marin, who's also named Trino. So Jenny meets Trino at the age of 13, except that Trino's 19. You know, no red flags. No red flags at all. Trino is a little smart. He eventually starts hanging out with Jenny's brothers because he comes from a family of a lot of girls. So I could see why he wants to go hang out with them. They become friends. He goes to, you know, the Rivera's house all the time to play and then also hang out with Jenny. So they're secretly together. He finally asks Don Pedro's permission to properly date Jenny. Don Pedro cautiously allows it, but I'm like, why? This man is way older than your daughter. Why? So Jenny and Trino go steady, and Jenny then enters high school at the age of 15. She goes to Polytech High School. And this is the high school where Snoop Dogg and Cameron Diaz attended.
Randomly disconnected people from Long Beach. Like, what?
I know. Well, Snoop Dogg definitely hails from the LBC. And I just didn't know that Cameron Diaz was another one, too.
Right.
So there she excels in her classes. She's an honor roll student. She's a straight A student. She plays the clarinet in the high school band. And then she becomes a teenage mom. So Trino knocks her up. The news truly devastates Jenny's mother. Her mom tells her and Trino, you should not be in the house when I have to tell your father this.
Mm.
You have to leave because he's not going to take it well. So Jenny ends up leaving the house. She moves in with Trino and his family in Wilmington. And there she endures the worst years of her life. Trino's family is not great to her. They call her La Gringa because she is bilingual. She speaks fluent English and Spanish. She's not traditional, like a traditional Mexican girl. She is not good enough for their son. So Jenny and Trino begin to fight, and they fight a lot. The fights become very physical. Trino becomes very abusive. At one point, he really believes that the child Jenny is carrying is not his. So one day, Jenny decides to stand up for herself. She tells Trino, look, I'm having this child. This is your child. And I'm going to continue to finish my high school. So she goes to attend Reed's Continuation School in 1985, and then she finally gives birth to her first child, Janae Marin Rivera, and she nicknames her Chickies. She eventually works and goes to school part-time. She works at a video store. One day at the store, Jenny receives flowers, which she doesn't know who it's from. Trino finds out and pretty much beats her one night. Jenny the next day goes to work, but before she goes to work, she goes to a drugstore. She buys over-the-counter drugs, and she checks in at work. She overdoses in the work bathroom. And fortunately, her coworkers arrived in time to find her on the floor, to call the ambulance, and take her to the hospital immediately. At the hospital, she has a reunion with her family. She, you know, this is kind of like the first sign of her brushing with death. You know, she survives. She agrees, you know, with her family and the doctors that she needs to admit herself to the Los Amigos Rehabilitation Center in Downey. And there she gains her strength. She finishes her school. She realizes that, you know, she suffers a lot from depression, but, you know, many people believe that she was probably suffering from postpartum after, you know, giving birth to her first child. So in 1986, she finishes her high school. She's valedictorian. She's given 8 different college scholarships. She breaks up with Trino. This is the one out of many times she breaks up with him. And she goes to Disneyland out of all places to celebrate. Yep. In 87, she attends Long Beach City College. She ends up back with Trino again. Trino continues to beat her. So she leaves Trino to move in with her family. She gets a job at Warehouse Music and at the flea markets to sell CDs to compensate and, you know, save up more money. Then one night, Trino meets her at work at Warehouse Music, asks her to go into his car to talk. And that's where he kind of takes advantage of her. He has sex with her. And a month later, she gets pregnant again. You know, in her book, she you know, people were always asking, why did you go back? This was her first love. This is the first love of her life. Right. And she was very young. And even in her book, she's like, love makes you do a lot of stupid things and a lot of crazy things. She runs away again. Trino beats on her again. She is contemplating abortion with her mother. Her mother tells her, no, you need to keep the child. So she is now renting a garage out of Gus's house, her big brother. But she wants to, you know, continue with her schooling. So she transfers from Long Beach City College to Cal State, where she pursues her bachelor's in business. She then ends up getting a job at Bank of America while helping her father manage his new label, Cintas Acuario. And to this very day, it's a very successful label. It's a label that represents a lot of Mexican regional singers. And he ends up representing, you know, his sons who become singers, and of course, Jenny Rivera. But the one big singer that he represents is Chalino Sanchez. And if you don't know who Chalino Sanchez is, he was pretty much the pioneer of narcocorridos. And if you don't know what narcocorridos are, they are songs that talk about the cartel, narcos, drugs, having big fancy trucks, guns, and more drugs. So definitely something you do not like jazzercise to.
I mean, depending.
Depending, but Chalino Sanchez is big. He was the voice of this people of a working class in Mexico. And he, you know, was very famous. Like, he was the Tupac of Mexico, and he made having a gun and wearing a cowboy hat a thing. So he was really big. And him and Jenny were very close friends. Even his wife was really good friends with Jenny. So in 1989, Jenny and Trino welcomed second child, Jacqueline Marin Rivera. They nickname her Jackie. Jenny wants to, you know, earn more money. She needs to make more money because now she's having more kids. So she ends up going to Anthony's real estate school, where she receives her real estate license. And then she leaves B of A. She goes to sell houses for Century 21. Mm. Get this. In her first 4 months of as a real estate agent, she sells 6 houses and buys her first home at the age of 20. I couldn't even sell 3 pairs of jeans at the Gap when I was working there in high school.
I'm a terrible salesperson.
I know.
I was like, I don't know. Do you want it or not? Like,
I know. I'm not even bother asking you about applying for a credit card. So here we are.
Oh, God. I used to hate that at the Gap.
I know. Tammy, how many credit cards?
Every customer. No.
So she then goes back to Trino again, but under her own terms. So she tells him, like, if you're going to live under this roof, you're going to get a job. So he ends up working with her in her career, and Jenny helps him become a loan officer. And this weird thing happens. They actually have stability. They don't fight. They're not having these violent outbursts with one another. They are actually, you know, in a very stable situation. Like, they're working, they're making money. They have a family, they have a house. They have another child in 1991, and it is baby number 3 for them, and they name him Trinidad Angelo Marin. Uh-huh. He ends up changing his name as the child grows older. He ends up changing his name to Mikey, and we'll talk about why that is later. Mm-hmm. In 1992, Trino and Jenny have one hell of a savage fight, which resulted in Jenny having Trino thrown in jail. Then Jenny gets news that her friend and music artist of her father's, Chalino Sanchez, has passed away. Mm. So one night, Jenny ends up going to a club with her friends and Carson, and they kind of push her to do karaoke. So she decides to sing the song Nieves de Enero, which is one of Chalino's songs. And she just knocks it out of the park. Mm. So the shy little girl that she used to be, that would run off the stage, is no longer shy. She really has vocals. And what's really amazing is that she's not classically trained, you know? Right. So her first album actually was a gift to her father, and she names it Jenny La Guerra Rivera. So now she's calling herself Jenny with an I. Mm. This is just a personal album that she makes for her father. And the father's like, you can sing. I'm going to market this album. Aww. So her first album then comes out, which is called Chacalosa, which is slang for party girl. And it's released in 95. And on the onset of her musical career, she was told by many, many, many people, mainly men, that she would never make it.
Girl.
And this is at a time, and still today, that the genre known as regional Mexican music was and is still dominated by men.
Mm.
And in 2012, with an interview with Billboard magazine, Jenny even explains it. Even in her book, she's like, I did not fit the typical mold of a female in this industry. Mm. I'm not 5'9". I'm not skinny. I don't have, you know, this glamazon look, but I can sing. She had a lot of people slam doors in her face, too. So these were a lot of issues that Rivera had to face as a female trying to crack into the regional musical, the regional Mexican genre.
Yeah.
So she eventually proves a lot of people wrong. She signs on to Sony Music in the late 90s and then Fonovisa Records in 99. Jenny then releases her first commercial album with Fonovisa called Que Me Entierren Con La Banda, May They Bury Me With The Band. Mm. And it had a big local hit. It's called Las Malandrinas. And Jenny stated in an interview that she said that Las Malandrinas pays homage to her female fans. She also said that the song blew up and people became interested. And that's when Jenny Rivera, the artist, was actually born with that song.
Damn.
So in 1995, she meets and marries her second husband, Juan Lopez. And he's way better than Trina to a certain extent. There's still a couple of red flags. For example, he has 3 different children from 3 different women. He kind of moves in with Jenny, like, doesn't ask her. He just moves into this house that she buys in Corona.
Girl.
Her second house at that. They are actually pretty good together. He really believes in Jenny and her musical career. And he really takes care of her children.
Mm.
The ones from Trino. And then they have their own children, Jenica and Johnny. So now Jenny, at this time, has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 children at this point. And the best things about these pregnancies was that it actually helped her career. She was worried that it was going to plummet her career because it proved to her female fans that you can be a mother, a wife, and still pursue your own dreams.
Yeah.
And soon Juan is sent to jail for immigrant smuggling. Jenny goes back and forth to visit Juan in prison and then faces another horrible episode. One night in 1997, Jenny describes in her book, she is followed and raped in front of her house after shooting the music video for La Chacalosa, which was at a nightclub. And in her book, Unbreakable, Jenny describes how she encountered a man with green eyes asking if she was El Cinco's lady. And this was the same man that raped her. El Cinco, I believe, was Juan. And Juan dealt with a lot of, you know, interesting people. Let's just put it that way. So Jenny carries this burden with her. And she doesn't open up to anyone about it until she writes about it in her book. But she eventually opens up to Juan after he is released from prison. Soon after he's released, the marriage then declines. He's having infidelities and affairs with other women. And then he's later arrested again on charges of dealing drugs.
Girl.
He later dies in prison in 2009 due to complications of pneumonia.
Ugh.
97 is still not the best year for Jenny in her career, yes, but in her personal life, no. She hits a major burden. In 1997, her younger sister Rosie confesses that Jenny's ex-husband Trino used to sexually molest her and was doing the same thing to Chickies and her youngest daughter Jackie. So Trino was sexually molesting her little girls and her little sister as young as 7. And it stopped when they were 14. And proof of this came out with a physical examination that Jenny had conducted after Rosie had shared this news with her. The molestation case was opened in 97. And Trino, when he found out that Rosie had told the family this, he runs away. He disappears for 9 years. He's a fugitive before he was apprehended in actually April of 2006 after Jenny and her daughters go on a radio show to recall their experiences and leave it to the public and the community. They were flooded by phone calls from Trino's neighbors saying, no, he lives next door. So this,
good for them.
I know. So this guy who runs away doesn't leave to go to another city. He stays around Long Beach and the idiot is going to get caught. Like, he really thought like no one was going to catch him. And at that time, he was already married with kids. So fortunately, an FBI agent that was listening to the radio show contacts Jenny. He gets all the info. They raid his house. They raid Trino's house. They arrest him. They actually give the handcuffs that they used to arrest Trino with to Jenny's sister, Rosie. So Trino is convicted of sexual assault and rape and sentenced to more than 31 years in prison without parole in 2007 to 2008. The court proceedings were very, very, very arduous. It was very, very ugly. And there were times where fights would break out in the courtroom between Trino's family and the Riveras.
Jesus.
So to make matters worse, Jenny and her family find out that her father, Don Pedro, had been cheating on her mother with the family's photographer, whom now was carrying his child.
Oh, my God.
It just snowballs into worse and worse events for them. Just imagine.
Like, are you going to be every cliche? Like,
I really hate a lot of the men in this story. It's the men in the story for me that really get me. Totally. With this family drama and dealing with, you know, Juan and then the passing of Juan, Jenny meets her first true love of her life. And that's a man who goes by the name of Fernie, but she names him Pinche Pelon. And that means fucking baldy in English. So this affair, this relationship lasted a whole entire decade until her death. It was an on again, off again, romantic relationship. According to Fernie, the relationship would always be off, of course, when she was with someone else or was married. Ultimately, it was a friendship that evolved through the years from the moment they met when he was working on a radio station in Los Angeles. He was 23 and she was about 10 years older. Yes, their chemistry was undeniable. Together, they shared the love of music from country to regional Mexican music. And life experiences. Jenny in her book even describes Fernie as her first true real love. He was the
first. It's so true though. There is like that thing where like
When
you're young, you think like love is a certain kind of thing. And often, unfortunately, it's like you associate it with like struggle or like difficulty or even abuse. Mm-hmm. Like love is supposed to hurt. Like love is bad. Like love is this like painful thing. And then like you meet someone as an adult who like doesn't treat you like that. You're like, oh, got it. It's like this is what it actually is. So that's so
and
sweet.
That's what she like, felt. Exactly. Everything that you said, Bryce, is exactly how she felt.
Yeah.
She was like, this is what it's supposed to feel like. I didn't feel this way with Trino. I kind of felt this way with Juan, but I feel it with this younger man.
That's so and sweet.
Not only was he her first love, he was her first orgasm. It's in her book. She's like, I didn't get my first orgasm until I was in my 30s, which I was like, girl, I feel for you. I really feel bad. Like,
but like that is the thing though, is like, not to be wildly graphic, but like here we are. But like that's the thing too, is like the first time you like sleep with someone who's like an attentive lover versus someone who's just like fucking you, you're like, oh shit, like what is that? Like,
yes.
Oh, I'm not just sleeping with like a nightmare of a human. Like they actually pay attention.
Yeah, aka okay. Her, you know, first husband. Which technically, I mean, going back into my research, I never found any paperwork stating that they were married. They were just lifelong partners. I think in the mix, like in the Spanish culture, like when you're with someone, it's like they're just automatically considered like your husband or tío or tía or something. Technically, Juan was her first husband on paper, but
technically, Emily is my common law wife. So like, I get it.
Yeah, that's what it was. Like Trino was like a common law husband to her, but there you are. So not only does she have her first orgasm, but she's like he's the first guy that, you know, smokes her out, meaning that she gets to try out smoking pot with him. So she gets to, you know, smoke a doobie for the first time with Fernie.
Hilarious.
Then, you know, nothing is ever permanent. It kind of goes downhill. So Fernie is abusing drugs. He eventually starts abusing meth. And Jenny tries to help him.
Problem is no joke. It's
really bad. Like Jenny could tell that there was something wrong with him, with his skin, his weight, his attitude, his mind. At one point, he had a bad episode, and he jumps off of a 3-5 story building.
God.
He survives, but half of his body is broken. They try to put him in rehab. It doesn't work. So Jenny, you know, it's like when you love something, you have to let it go.
Yeah.
She was getting very, very famous, and he was trying to figure out a lot of things with his life. So she had to part ways, but they always found each other in, you know, certain times. And we'll talk about that soon. So we go into the early to mid 2000s. Jenny's stardom grows super fast. It just snowballs. So she began to attain more substantial success with the record. And it's my favorite one. One of my favorite. Parrandera, rebelde y atrevida. And you want to know what that means in English, guys? It means a party girl, rebellious and bold. Boss bitch.
That, ironically, is the same thing that I have on my lower back tattoo. Weird.
Right above your tribal butterfly. Is that what
tribal butterfly? Yes, 100%. So gross. Cool.
Bryce,
no offense to anyone that has that. Like, we all make choices, but
I know. One of my friends got a tattoo on her right side of her back, and she's like, look, it's not a tramp stamp. I'm like, no, it's an indie tramp stamp because it's on the right. You're breaking boundaries.
I do not have any tattoos, but I almost got a tattoo in Thailand, a la Ed Helms in The Hangover. And then I had, like, thank God, a moment of clarity. And I was like, this is how you get hepatitis. Like, you need to leave. Like, I was at the tattoo parlor. Like, oh, no, don't do this. Don't do this.
Okay. Let's see. She releases this album in 2005. The album, it goes to gold, and then it goes platinum.
Crazy.
And she is set to play at the Kodak Theater, which she sells out, and she becomes the first female banda singer to sell out the Kodak. She bursts out into the scene with her follow-up album. It's my other second favorite is De Contrabando, or The Contraband, which she tours with for the first time in Mexico. So you guys have to understand that Jenny Rivera is a Mexican regional artist, but she has to tackle the masses in Mexico, and it's a different breed compared to the West Coast here.
Totally.
So that is her first big test. If she can grab them, then she's made it. So she performs in Guadalajara, Mexico, and it's a concert that can definitely make and break you. She does an amazing job. Like, Mexico loves her. She's set. She is completely set. She's done. In 2007, she releases Mi Vida Loca, which debuted number one on the regional Mexican album charts and number two on the top Latin album charts. In the U.S., the album garnered an award for Regional Mexican Album of the Year in 2008 at the Latin Billboard Music Awards. And in a 2011 interview with Billboard magazine, she stated that that was more of Jenny telling her story through music. My life has been so put out there by the media that I figured I might as well put it out there myself in my own words and let the music speak for itself. She already was being in the tabloid eye. She is getting involved in a lot of drama with a lot of other Mexican regional singers. And to be quite honest, I was shocked and upset to learn that these singers were female. And Jenny had to not only defend herself from the males in the industry, but she had to defend herself from the females in the industry. There were a lot of catty women. Jenny was always in the top five of the Billboard charts. Her albums were going platinum. She was now receiving success, and no one could be happy for her.
Yeah.
So that same year, she releases another album called La Diva en Vivo, a live album that consisted of songs recorded with a mariachi band, which garnered her second Latin Grammy nomination for Best Ranchero Album. That year, she was the only female singer nominated in that category, and the album was recorded in the Gibson Amphitheater in Universal City, California. Jenny sells out the concert, which led her to become the first female banda singer to do so. So she sells out the Gibson Amphitheater. And then her 10th studio album, Jenny, releases in 2008. It's number one in the Billboard Latin charts. The album led Jenny to win her second Lo Nuestro Award for Banda Artist of the Year, becoming the first female act to win the accolade.
Crazy.
So yeah, she was going to have a lot of haters. A lot.
Yeah.
In 2009, she changes course and recorded her first full mariachi studio album titled La Gran Señora, which garnered a Latin Grammy nomination for Best Ranchero Album. It peaked number two in the Billboard top album charts in the U.S., and she also became the first Latin artist. Get this, she becomes the first Latin artist to sell out the Nokia Theater in 2009.
That's so crazy.
And then we go into arrests and scandals. In 2008, this is like bad girl Banda right here. So Jenny gets arrested in Raleigh, North Carolina for allegedly hitting a fan. During her concerts, fans would all of a sudden throw beer cans at her.
No.
Yeah. So at one point, Jenny, you know, when she gets hit by this beer can, she grabs the fan, she kind of berates them, she kind of punches them. And then the fan calls the police. And after Jenny...
Fuck off. Like, you're going to be a little shit. And then you're going to call the police too.
Yes.
Ugh.
Yes. So Jenny gets done with the show. And right after she gets off the stage, they arrest her. But she is only detained for a few hours. She's released for very shortly for $3,000. In October 2008, it was the year of sex tapes. So we have Paris Hilton, Kim Kardashian, Jenny Rivera comes out with a sex tape.
Crazy.
And then in 2009, she is arrested at the Mexico City International Airport. Mm. She failed to declare $52,467 in cash that was in her purse. At first,
look, we've all been. You just forget that there's $52,000 in your purse. It's just sitting there. Ugh, how can they expect her to remember all of that?
Right. And at that time, Jenny was being told, hey, you're going to go here and sing. You're going to collect this cash. Then you're going to go here the next hour and sing for 30 minutes. And then you're going to collect that cash. And at that point, like, she was just making money right and left. And in Mexico, like, when you're doing private shows,
girl,
especially with drug cartels, because that was also proven that she was hired. I think it was through her booking manager. I think her booking manager just booked her everywhere, everything. And I think at that point she was like, wait, who am I performing for? Really? Really? Okay, I guess. Well, they're going to pay me what? 300? for 300,000 for an hour? All right. Okay, that's fine. So
let me tell you about the things that I would sing for 300,000 an hour to whom I would sing them. There is almost no one on the planet.
I'm a Barbie girl in the Barbie world. Life absolutely. Is fantastic. That's fantastic. In drag,
people always,
you do it,
people
right?
always do that. They're like, oh, like, would you do this for X amount of money? I'm like, yes. I don't understand the question.
What would Bryce do for 300,000?
That list is very long. There is not that many things that I would not do. Let's just be real honest about that. I have,
if you have a lot of time on your hands, I would go over that list with you.
Yeah, that's a different episode for sure.
So she's caught with all this cash. Jenny explains that she thought she only had 20 grand, but in customs, the rule is you have to declare anything that's over 10,000. So she's arrested. She pays the $8,400 in fines. She's released.
And probably then, from the cash that was in her purse.
So in 2011, Jenny receives a call from Edward James Olmos to participate in a little film called Philly Brown, starring James himself, Lou Diamond Phillips, and a young Gina Rodriguez.
Damn.
It's her first acting role. She takes on the challenge. It's Edward James Olmos. Like, when he calls, yep. you do answer and you do what he says.
You learn how to act.
Exactly. It's her first time acting. So she plays the mother to Gina Rodriguez's character, mm-hmm. who is an aspiring rapper and writer. This is a good example to explain how amazing and selfless Jenny Rivera was. Mm-hmm. She befriends and develops a great connection with the film photographer. So they hang out a lot, you know, on set. He tells her, yeah, I'm not getting paid to be here, but I'm just, you know, taking pictures and putting this on my resume. It's going to be great. I need this for my portfolio.
Oh, God, exposure.
I know. And Jenny is like, really? Okay. She then talks to her people and tells her people, whatever I'm getting paid for this film, you put it in that photographer's name. Everything that I make on this film, I want him to take.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. She's like, I can make this money easily. He can't, you know, and that's amazing. Like, she did that for him. And that was the amazing thing about Jenny Rivera. She was a humanitarian. Yeah. She really put money towards people in the community. There's stories of people on her, you know, on fan pages of her Instagram that say, you know, I reached out to her if I needed a surgery, she made it happen. You know, I needed, yeah, this, you know, these expensive pairs of glasses, she made it happen. So she was so amazing in that light. And then we fast forward to 2000, later in 2011, Jenny meets Esteban Loaiza. He's a tall glass of water. He's a big boy. He's really tall. Like, he's a really tall guy. Not only is he a pro baseball player, but he used to play for the Sox and Oakland. And he was also at that time playing for the LA Dodgers. So on paper, he looked great, but we learned that he is not, you know, that bueno. Esteban is not forward about a lot of things. He's not honest with Jenny about a lot of things. One of the things that he's not honest about is the fact that 2 years before meeting Jenny, he was arrested for a DUI. Jenny, in her book, describes her love for him as mature, but it wasn't the love that she had for Fernie, you know. They're on again, off again, but he eventually asks for her hand in marriage in 2010.
Damn.
They are married, and it does not last very long. Aww. Yeah, but Jenny's career goes from really, you know, accelerated to on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
So Jenny becomes a producer on Mundo Dos, which is a reality TV show that produces Chiquis, her daughter, and Roxy. Then the show turns into a spinoff of I Love Jenny, and it becomes a big hit. So Jenny works as a coach the second season of the Mexican talent show La Voz, or The Voice in Mexico. And then in October 2012, People in Español named her one of the top 25 most powerful women. She opens two boutiques. She starts a taco truck business. She's now an actress. She's a producer, a humanitarian. She's just on a roll. Also, she is named a spokeswoman for the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, a proclamation that was given officially naming August 6th as Jenny Rivera Day by the Los Angeles City Council for all of her charity work and community. Mm. In 2011, she is given the star at the Poly Walk fame at Polytech High School in Long Beach. She becomes the first female Mexican regional singer to now sell out the Staples Center in September of 2011.
It's crazy.
Now, with celebrity comes threats. And Jenny Rivera was getting a lot of threats, especially while she was touring in Mexico. First off, is tipped by the FBI that a cartel in Reynosa wanted to kidnap her. At first, she's like, should I cancel the concert? The venue where she was supposed to have the concert tells her you have to do it or we're going to hold your assistants hostage. So she decides...
venues? They are insane. It's like this dark underside you don't think about, but like musicians get blackmailed by venues all the time.
Absolutely.
Just another thing to be angry about. Carry on.
So the FBI tips Jenny about a cartel that might possibly kidnap her. It's a major threat that, you know, you don't take lightly, especially right. in Reynosa. So Jenny plans with her people that she's going to travel from California to Texas, take a 14 Hummer caravan of military personnel Jesus. That will escort her in and out of Reynosa. So she goes to Reynosa with this caravan. She does the show. She goes back. Success. So her stardom continues to go to overdrive as she's turning more records into platinum. She has a radio show called Contacto Directo. She is in talks of starting her own English album, possibly doing an English talk show where they're pretty much claiming that she's going to be the next Spanish Oprah. And then... there's this thing that happens out of nowhere. It's the sex tape heard around the world. I'm just going to touch on a couple of bullet points here. So one morning, Chiquis, her daughter, she opens a text message from her mother stating that she is no longer welcome in the house, that Jesus. The locks have been changed because of a surveillance footage that captured a supposed sex act between Chiquis and Jenny's third husband, Esteban. According to Chiquis in many interviews that she had done, she and her family, along with Jenny and Esteban, they go watch a movie one evening. They come back. Jenny drops them off, then leaves to go run an errand. Oh, and supposedly Chiquis was caught in the 6-minute segment inside the bedroom of Jenny and Esteban.
Oof.
And according to Jenny, or the people that were around Jenny, from what others claim, they believe that something happened. People believe that Jenny was already being surrounded by a lot of negative people that were putting a lot of bad things into her head.
Right.
According to Chiquis, nothing happened. She walked into the room where Esteban was laying in bed on his iPad. They had small talk for 6 minutes. She wished him a good night, and that was it.
Yeah.
According to those who viewed the footage, they said that they saw nothing, that it was very grainy. You just see Chiquis and Esteban in the room. They're talking. She leaves. Esteban goes into the bathroom, comes out in a towel. It was the biggest thing that happened before her death that kind of blew up in the Spanish tabloids.
Right.
So this leads Jenny to file a divorce from Esteban. And a separation between mother and daughter happens. Jenny refuses to talk to Chiquis. And then Jenny goes and does her tour in Mexico, where she goes to Monterrey in December of 2012. And there she performs one hell of a show. Mm-hmm. She does a song called Paloma Negra that she dedicates to Chiquis, kind of like an olive branch. Like, you have my forgiveness. There's even reports stating that, you know, Jenny and her were supposed to reunite at a Christmas get together with the family. They were going to bury the hatchet, but unfortunately, that doesn't come to be because on December 9th of 2012, Jenny hops into a Learjet 25 with her team at 3 a.m. They were supposed to fly to Toluca, and they never make it. Yeah. And you have the info on that, Bryce.
Yeah. So first, I will just lightly kind of just give like the straight up facts in terms of like the because then there's so many things that are, like, surrounding the crash itself. So we'll kind of, we'll get into that separately. Just because, you know, it was the culmination of so many other disparate parts of her life. And it's like, oh, these things came together in like really weird coincidences. Like, that's odd. But basically, like you had mentioned, they had done the concert in Monterey, and her, Jenny, and five other members of the tour were flying back on her private Learjet, Learjet 25. And it actually had had technical difficulty previously. So she actually had had issues with this jet before, which, like, again, what a strange sentence to say, like, my jet is having issues.
Right.
So she leaves, and they actually left around 3 a.m., like you had said. And there was supposed to actually be six people on the plane. Gustavo Adolfo Infante, a reporter, he claimed that another singer, Alejandra Guzman, was actually also supposed to be on that flight.
But oh, wow.
That they were waiting for her, and she was late, and they ended up leaving without her. And so that she basically missed this flight. And then the plane, like you mentioned, never arrived. They leave the Monterey airport around 3:20 in the morning, and they are supposed to fly to Toluca, which was where she was filming La Voz, as you had mentioned. Unfortunately, they lost contact with the plane, and that's it. Like, they basically, 15 minutes into the flight, they lose contact. And that next day, they find the wreckage of the plane. It looks like it was, there were no survivors, and there were five passengers and two crew members, and they basically reported that the plane had, like, completely disintegrated on impact, mm-hmm. and as I mentioned, there were no survivors, which is actually a little atypical of how smaller jets crash, so that was sort of the first weirdness, that it had essentially full-on disintegrated, as opposed to, like, I don't know, there was some question about the way it crashed. She is then buried on December 31st, so roughly 2.5 weeks later, in Long Beach. And basically, that is sort of what starts the speculation, we'll say, mm-hmm. about the cause of her death, the circumstances of her death, and whether her death is actually even real. Because there was such a delay, and her father went on and said that it was because of legal issues and because of international issues, that, like, the plane crash had happened, you know, in Mexican airspace. Obviously, she was in Mexico when she died, and so, like, he said that that was the issue. But mm-hmm. basically, it causes this media storm of, like, speculation and false reporting and sightings of her because of the delay. So the U.S. and Mexican government do investigate the crash, and 2 years later, in 2014, they actually close the case because the cause of the crash is not able to be found because the plane is so disintegrated that there's no way to determine what officially caused the plane crash, so they actually just close the case.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they just say that it disintegrated upon impact. And officially, the probable cause was loss of control of the aircraft for undetermined reasons.
Right.
So, you know, like you had mentioned, this is a woman at the height of her career, even at the launching point of even bigger success. So I think in general, we are quite fascinated when people like that die, because even though she was in her 40s, which by a lot of standards in the entertainment industry for a woman, that's, you know, sometimes considered past their prime. But for her, she actually was, like, on the precipice of, like you mentioned, becoming such a large mogul. And
yeah.
So a lot of the conspiracy theories surrounding her death started, well, I mean, I don't know how you want to transition to that, but basically, like, the main theories were that, A, she wasn't really dead,
mm-hmm.
which we love that. And B, that she had actually been targeted for assassination by the cartel, and El Chapo specifically allegedly had, like, put in the process to have her killed. So
correct.
People very much were not believing. And to this day, like, you had even mentioned before we started, but to this day, there are people who believe that she is alive.
It's really, really sad because even in her book, she writes that she was getting a lot of death threats via phone, email, and message boards on her Facebook, on her Twitter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned El Chapo, who is connected to La Barbie. El Chapo is the father-in-law to La Barbie, who was a part of a big cartel.
And he is basically the one, La Barbie is basically the one who has, like, since come out and been like, these are the things that, like, I was told to do. So he's, like, basically corroborated so many of the conspiracy theories about the threats that she was receiving.
Mm-hmm. Looking into his case, he was actually arrested and extradited in 2010 to 2012. But it was, I was even looking deeper into him as a whole. So he eventually becomes a U.S. informant, and Mike Vigil, who is the former chief officer of the DEA, in an interview with mySanAntonio.com, he was asked straight up, like, did La Barbie send a hit to Jenny Rivera? And he said, no, it was simply an act of God. They were socially linked, but you know what? She was a singer, and that's what a lot of singers did, especially, like, since she was a Mexican regional artist who did sing Narco Corridos. But also, he was linked to other singers. You know, was it possible that he could have put a hit from, you know, from prison on her? Possibly. And on top of that, you know, you bring up the issues with the plane. The plane was built in 1969. And at that time, they didn't put black boxes in the plane. Right. And the plane was being owned and operated by Eduardo Esquino Nunez, whom is very shady. He's the owner of Starwood Management, who owns 14 luxury Learjets. The one that Jenny was in had a lot of problems because Nunez owed millions of back taxes to the government. And he was desperate to sell Jenny this specific plane. She was going to buy it for $250,000. And he offered to give her this plane as a test drive for her tour in Mexico during this time. And unfortunately, you know, that didn't end very well.
Right.
Looking into the FAA records, he falsified the record, stating that all of his jets were up to date. All of his jets were maintenance. But the jets that he had, especially the one that Jenny Rivera was on, dating back to 2005, it was involved in an accident. It was also stated in many records, especially by the pilot, so that the door wasn't working. It shook violently when it reached a certain altitude. It was destined to fail. The plane was destined to fail. So a lot of people believe that there was a bomb on the plane, or other people, you know, who are a little more logical, they're like, well, if you read the reports, it's all mechanical. Like, the plane was ready to fail. And when you're flying in the terrain of the mountains of Nuevo León, it's kind of dangerous. The visibility is foggy. The mountains are high. Even when the first responders got to the site, they had a hard time looking for the crash site and a hard time getting there, for one. You know, there's even claims that the people of the village of that was next to Nuevo León claimed that they saw the plane explode. So there is a speculation. No, there was a bomb. But I'm like, okay, for one thing, who's up at 3:30 in the morning looking at the sky?
Right.
Like, who's up during that time? And is it quite possible that a plane can explode midair if it's not properly maintained and hasn't been maintained for years? And then people were, like you said, they were coming out with all these conspiracies. They're like, well, her dresses were intact. And if you think about it, well, clothes don't have weight to them. A plane and flesh does. So when you see these, I don't know, these plane crashes and you see the debris, you can see like the belongings of those victims, like still intact.
Right.
Which is interesting, I get, but people really ran with the conspiracies that she is alive, that she faked her death, that she sacrificed all the people in the plane. The people in the plane was her makeup artist, her manager, her lawyer, her costumer. And I believe that was it. And then the two pilots.
Right.
The two pilots, one was 78 years old. And according to Mexican aviation rules, that's you shouldn't be maneuvering a plane that was over a certain weight limit. shouldn't be over a limit of 11,000. The weight of the plane was 12,500. And then the second pilot, who was 21 years old, he didn't have a specific license to fly into U.S. territory. So there are a lot of like discrepancies with that. Mm-hmm. So it does rub people the wrong way. They're like, well, there's all these other things that happen leading up to her death that it does point to the cartels. Honestly, I think that Jenny Rivera was given a lemon. I think that there was an element of cartel activity, but not directed to her because of Nunez. Nunez was related to the cartels because he comes from a prominent family out of Monterrey, which provided drug planes to the infamous narco Amador Carrillo, who was the Lord of the Skies. If you see the second season of Narcos, you'll know who I'm talking about. And ever since then, he's always dealt with cartels. And he was even in prison in Florida at one point for dealing drugs, moving cocaine between the U.S. and Mexico.
Damn.
It's a lot to dig in and to dig through. But the masses have their own theories that she's alive. I don't know if you read into the one theory that she has her own cooking show on YouTube.
Yes, I've seen it.
You want to talk about that?
Clips of it as well, yeah. Let's
talk about that. What is your thought on that?
Just in general, I think I don't necessarily believe in a lot of conspiracy theories. Uh-huh. I think they're fun. I enjoy like knowing about them. But I think for the most part, a conspiracy theory often just helps us to feel like we're special. And that, like, we know something that other people don't know.
Right.
And that's fine. I totally get that. But I think that there is wisdom in the adage of thinking horses, not zebras, when you hear hoof prints or hoof beats, I guess. And, you know, that's not always the case. But I think we just like the sort of romanticized idea of conspiracy theories. Mm-hmm. It's, like, not the thing that we're being told it is, that it's not the simplest solution, that we know something that like other people don't know. Totally get that.
Right.
I just think you need to be careful with that thinking because it gives you a sense of self-aggrandizement that then no one can like refute, even with facts. And you're like, no, I just know the truth. It's like, right, but when there are facts countering that opinion, you need to be open to being wrong too.
Exactly. And
I think that's where like conspiracy theories fail, is that there's no error, there's no room for error. Once you know the conspiracy, then it can't be anything else. And I think something more likely is, yeah, there are things that we aren't being told and, you know, that are kept secret or that we don't know the whole story. So maybe there is some, a little bit of the truth and a little bit of conspiracy theory, like to make what the actual truth is. And I get that, but I just think in general, conspiracy theories have very little room for like fact often. All of that to say, I think the idea that this woman has a cooking show on YouTube, like the original conspiracy theories, sort of centered around her not wanting to be in the limelight anymore and her wanting to like be done with her fame. You know, she had certainly made enough money. She would not need to work if she didn't want to. And so many people believed that she wanted out and that she was done. So in that sense, that to me seems like that desire is understandable. I don't think that she would necessarily, hopefully, kill 7 people to make that happen.
Exactly. Which is so you always not.
But like that to me makes sense. Like, oh, maybe this person wanted out. Then it makes no sense. Well, if they wanted out, why would they be trying to get back into the limelight through YouTube, through TikTok? You know, it's, she has so funny body double.
When I was doing the series on her on TikTok, man, the amount of comments of people, she's alive. I have proof. I'm like, what's the proof? She faked her death. But where's the proof?
Right.
Well, she has a YouTube channel. I'm like, what? And for those of you that are probably trying to figure out, like, what's the YouTube channel? So back, I think it was in 2017. I could be wrong, or a little later, but this woman comes out with a YouTube channel called You Cook, I Cook, We All Cook. And what was so mind-boggling about this channel and so interesting and odd was that the woman doesn't show her face. Mm-hmm. She shows herself cooking these Mexican dishes. But the one thing that triggered a lot of people was the fact that she sounded identical to Jenny mm-hmm. Rivera. The way she talked, the way she, you know, used her choice of words, her hands. And at one point, this woman in the video starts using cooking utensils that have the butterfly. Jenny at that point was known as La Mariposa de Barrio, the mm-hmm. butterfly of the barrio. This woman starts to use these cooking utensils with that butterfly. So people are like, you know, in their heads, conspiracy theorists, well, you see, here it goes. That's her. Her hands look the same. She sounds the same. She has the utensil. She's cooking mm-hmm. the exact same meals. The craziest thing is that Jenny's family has gone on YouTube, on interviews, and they've said that this is not Jenny. It's a woman named Crystal. We've spoken to her because we kind of feel like she's done this on purpose. Mm-hmm. And because of the attention, she stopped. You know, people were actually calling her Jenny. Yeah. But her family members, like her children, and even her aunt, Jenny has an aunt called Aunt Pita, who goes on YouTube and she interacts with Jenny fans. And Jenny fans are always asking her, where's Jenny? We know she's alive. She's like, guys, she's not alive.
Right.
She is gone. I don't know how many times.
And that's the thing is now, because you're so convinced that you're right, you're forcing this family to relive the death of their loved one to try and convince you, a stranger, that they are actually dead. Like, ooh, that's not a great look.
It's not, but leave it to Spanish media. They really didn't help. I even presented in the TikTok videos about her life that a website by the name of Hoax Slayer by Michael Christensen proved to the masses that it was a hoax, that it was a website by the name of Nota El País that came out with the story of Jenny Rivera faked her death. She's alive. But it turned out that Nota El País was stealing logos from CNN, the BBC, to make them look credible when really they were falsified. So that was called out. But people are like, no, like, I know what I read and I know she's alive. And now I was even being told just this morning, I just got a message from another one of our followers. They're like, no, she's alive. I know this because I have proof that the pilot, one of the pilots survived. It's a man by the name of Jobs or Cobbs. And look, I have an interview from, you know, Univision. And what ended up happening is one of the pilots that was maneuvering the flight at the last minute changed with this gentleman. He wasn't on that flight. He didn't survive. And people used that and kind of turned it and twisted it as the pilot survived. One, this guy is 78 years old. You know, is he trained to use a parachute? Is he capable to use a parachute at his age? Like, I see a cane in his hand. Like, I mean.
Right.
It never adds up. It really doesn't.
Yeah, and there's the woman who is like a body double. Not a body double, but she was like an impersonator. And mm-hmm. she has like a TikTok following and people are convinced that it's the real Jenny Rivera. And she has the same swimsuit and she has the same outfit that Jenny wore at the concert in Monterey before she got on the plane. And like they think it's the same thing, like, it's all these little signals that she is alive and she's like trying to tell us. And it's like, right. But again, like, A, you have to understand the industry. Like, I don't remember if you ever watched back in like the early 2000s, they had a series about the woman who was Anna Nicole Smith's body double and like impersonator. It was very interesting because this woman was like losing herself in a way because she was so good at impersonating Anna Nicole. But, like, everything that she did was not for herself. So she's like, if Anna Nicole gains weight, then I gain weight. If she loses weight, then I lose weight. It's like her whole life was wrapped up in, like, and she was doing, like, appearances as Anna Nicole. And she answered to her. And she was just like, it's like, I wake up and I don't remember who I am. And so it's like, you have to understand that there are parts of the industry that are just about money. And that even though these people are entertainers, they're seen as a product mostly. Mm-hmm. And so what better way to like maximize the output of your product than to hire someone who looks like them so that they can make twice as many appearances, for example. And so, you know, again, it just goes back to like, if you're looking for facts that just confirm what you already think, that's not really looking for facts. So it's like, exactly. This woman who's maybe a body double, an impersonator, she has also been asked by the family to cease and desist and like to not call herself Jenny. And it's just, you know, ultimately at a very human level, it just comes down to like continuing the family's hurt, I think.
Oh, they're still in pain. Like I always tell people, you know, you say that she's alive, but when you see footage of her children mourning the loss of their mom,
yeah,
you know, how can you counter that? Speaking of the children, after Jenny's passing, Jenny did something amazing before her passing. She prepared them for, I guess, a career in reality shows. So after her passing, they come up with a spinoff called Riveras, and it's just based on her children. Chickies, Jackie, Mikey, Johnny, and Jenica, and how they're moving forward since the passing of their mother. And there's a, I think there's one season, I think it's the first season, where you see them packing up her life and they have to move out of the house. Jenny was living in, I believe it was Encino, in this beautiful mansion. And the, you know, the kids, you know, they couldn't afford to live there. It was like, it's a lot of money. To maintain that house. So they had to leave after a certain time, and you see them packing away her mom, the mom's clothing. They barely can't even work because they're so distraught. And I see that. I'm like, how can you tell these kids that their mom's still alive? You know, it's really, really sad. Another thing that happened, and I will bring this up too, it's kind of like the Paranormal Association. People now bring up conspiracy theories, and then to follow is the supernatural element. So people were coming up with pictures of their own theories that some supernatural elements or bad omens were occurring before her death during her concert. So people brought up the fact that her stage was in a shape of a cross. They believe that the cross was a bad omen, but I'm like, when I think of the cross, I think of Christ, you know, I think something positive. But people like, no, it's kind of odd. I'm like, it's not odd because the arena that she was performing in Monterrey was a theater in the round, and Jenny liked to interact with her audience, so she needed extensions to walk to the north, the west, the south, and the east end of the arena. So that made a lot of sense, and people were like, no, it's a bad omen. I'm like, oh my god, do what you will.
There's just like sometimes there's no argument with people.
And then another one, it obviously looks like a Photoshop picture. I tried making a TikTok of it and people took it the wrong way. I was trying to discredit it. I was trying to mention in this specific photograph, you see Jenny in the middle of the stage. There's this dark, shrouded looking blob. Yeah. People are like, oh, that's the Grim Reaper. That's the Grim Reaper. Or that's Santa Muerte. And they blew it up. And I said, no, it's not what you think it is. It looks Photoshop. And look, there's different angles of her in the same spot, her arm raised up, mic by her mouth.
Right.
And you don't see that figure anywhere. It's a fake. It's non-credible. And people were like, no, it's the Grim Reaper. Oh, it was the Grim Reaper. It's negative. This image is negative. I'm like, oh my god, you guys really missed the point. You really missed the point on this.
But again, it just goes back to like, if you want something to be true, then you close yourself off to like the potential to be wrong.
Right. And a lot of people, especially her fans, are very closed off, you know?
Yeah, and I get it. Like, it's sad. Yeah, it's really sad. It's very sad. We feel such a deep connection to these people. So it's like your grief isn't wrong. You're not wrong to like wish that they weren't dead, but just don't let it make you like the very thing that you don't want to be. Like, ooh.
Another thing that also was pointed out by other people, here we go with the Paranormal Association. Mm-hmm. So villagers and other people have said that they claim to hear a woman singing at the crash site.
Whoa, that's creepy.
Nuevo Leon, So people claim that they hear who they believe to be Jenny Rivera.
Yeah.
Another thing that people claim to witness at her gravesite in the Lost Souls Cemetery in Long Beach is it's something that's a little more believable. They believe, like, they notice a lot of butterflies around her gravesite.
Wow.
Which is very beautiful. And I've seen video. People have captured. There is that I could see. Like, that right. is credible. When you have it there on video, actually happening in front of you, there's many videos of people posting online where they're like, no, there's always butterflies surrounding her grave.
That's really sweet. So
that's one thing that occurs. And another thing that occurs on her gravesite is people believe that they hear a woman singing by her gravesite. There's also images of a figure of a woman that could be seen at her memorial service. I think it was either in Nokia or the Gibson where they had her memorial service. Supposedly there is this figure that looked like Jenny standing behind her brother Lupil. Another image surfaced of these women taking a picture at Esteban's house. After the service, they see what they believe to be a figure of Jenny Rivera on the reflection of the mirror. So there are a lot of these images that were popping out of the woodworks after her death that people were linking, you know, the ghost of Jenny. So now not only is she a big conspiracy theory, but she's also now a ghost.
Interesting.
So I always ask people, well, if you hear her singing or if you see these images, then that means she's passed. Do you still believe that she's alive? Yes. I'm like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, there's only one. So
it's one or the other. Her children, I think her daughter Jenica recently in an interview told the audience, my mom is gone. We know our truth. She is with Jesus. My mother is not here. Another thing too that happened that also popped out of the woodworks. I don't know if you read this, but Pepe Garza, who is a big radio disc jockey and figure in the community, he's one of the disc jockeys for Qué Buena. She comes out with this 35-minute video titled Jenny Rivera's Goodbye. The interview never published. So this was posted on Garza's YouTube channel, Pepe's Office, on Monday of 2019. It was, I think, December 2019 on a Monday. It shows Jenny's children, Vicky's and Johnny, sitting across from Pepe, waiting to hear for the first time an audio interview that Pepe Garza recorded with Jenny on July 27th of 2012.
Whoa.
So...
And they had never heard it?
They never heard it. This was released last year. So Pepe, for the longest time, had this interview in his possession. He's like, it was eating me up for so many years when to release it. And I felt more comfortable to release it right now. But I wanted it to be released to her children. And you can find the interview. It's on YouTube. It is stated by Pepe that one day at the studio, Jenny grabs Pepe and tells him, I need you to do an interview with me right now. Just the two of us, do not say anything. Do not leak this out to anyone. And in the interview, Jenny tells Pepe Garza that she's been receiving a lot of death threats. According to Pepe in the interview, he said there were a lot of things that were laid out on the table from Jenny, but they were not made clear.
Mm.
He knew that Jenny was going through something and that she was in trouble and that she looked and sounded very nervous. To end that interview, she said that she's, you know, with God, she feels his protection. She's going to continue to do her shows regardless. But this is something that she wanted to leave behind, a last testament, you know, which was very, very eerie, but very interesting. Yeah, that is pretty much our story on Jenny Rivera and her life and her career and her impact and her death, which is still a big question to this very day for a lot of people. And I will end by saying that, you know, Mexico is definitely a country of many conspiracy theories. So no matter what, I feel like people will still remember the way she lived, but also people will constantly talk about the way she died or is still alive, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, the thing that is nice, though, is that her legacy still does, like, impact so many people.
Yes.
And honestly, unfortunately, with Legacy, and some, that's sometimes negative and sometimes positive. Like, I think the conspiracy theories around her are all not great, honestly. But I know that they still do her annual charity concert, and her daughters are, like, very involved with that.
Yes.
And they still, like, raise money for her foundation, for the Battered Women's Home. And, like, they're still doing all of these things in her honor that I think really, like, preserve what she contributed to the world. So it's like, in some ways, it's very obviously, of course, it's so sad, but it's nice to know that, like, her family is able to, like, continue her legacy and to honor the things that she valued and to continue to do good in her name. And I think that's ultimately, like, what we, the best we can hope for, is that our loved ones will, like, continue
absolutely
in our names.
And they do very well, especially on their own. Like, you see pieces of Jenny in each and every one of them. Chiquis is now called La Princesa de la Banda. She has a singing career. She's very successful. Mm-hmm. She works hard for her career, and you can see that.
Yeah.
Jenica, her daughter, is a model and a body positive activist. Johnny, I think, is, you know, an artist, and I think he's coming out with his own apparel.
Wow.
Mikey is, you know, another artist too. He does a lot of street art. Becky has her own YouTube channel and is aspiring to be a singer. And who else? Her sister Rosie, Jenny's sister, is the CEO of Jenny Enterprises. So she's the overseer of of everything, you know, of that dynasty. So that's pretty much where they're at this point. And you could still kind of tune in to take a glimpse in their lives if you watch the show, The Riveras. That show was so popular, Bryce, that it went 7 seasons. I think the last season was released in 2018, 2019.
That's crazy.
So they were already taken care of. Like, right. Mama was watching them. Mama prepped them for that. So, yeah. So guys, that was our episode of Jenny Rivera. Thank you so much for tuning in. Like I said, if you want to learn more about Jenny Rivera, you can tune in to her show. There is a show based on her life that is now on Netflix. It was released in 2017 through Telemundo, and now Netflix has it. You can tune in. It's a very long series. It's 91 episodes, but it dives deep into her life and her family's life. You can also read her book, Unbreakable. I've read it. It's amazing. It's very inspiring. And if you want to tune into our series of Jenny Rivera or any of the artists that we've spoken about in the past, you can follow us at Hollywood Paranormal on TikTok. And speaking of our social media, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Hollywood Paranormal and Twitter on HWP Podcast. And please don't hesitate to send us your scary stories. We'd love receiving them. You can send it to us at hollyweirdparanormal@gmail.com. If you want to learn more about our Patreon, you can go to www.hollyweirdparanormal/patreon.com.
Yes.
And you can also venture on our website, hollyweirdparanormal.com. You can read more on our bios, listen to past episodes, shop in our merch store, and kind of stalk us on our social media.
Yes.
Yeah. So tune in to our next episode, guys. We're going to be talking about the Los Angeles Police Museum. I'll be doing investigation next week in Pasadena at the museum with our friends from Booze and Bros podcast and the show Ghost Loop, Mike Vital and Chris Califf. Bryce will be enjoying that investigation from afar with his eyes
hiding under my blankie.
Exactly. So tune into that. If you like Hollyweird Paranormal, we would love for you to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really does help us out. It really does make us look a little more visible with all these podcasts out there. Everybody's podcasting during the pandemic, so
God,
it helps us. Even my mom has a podcast. No, just kidding. But
I love it.
She was talking about one. All right, guys. Take care. Always remember to stay Holly Weird. Take care of yourselves.
Yes.
Bryce, do you have anything you want to say?
Bye.
Bye. Wear a mask. Take care of yourselves, yes, and be nice to one another, guys. Much love, and we'll talk to you very soon. Till next time. Mi pueblo tan querido, extraño mi pueblo tan querido.